conciencia.
Welcome back to the Opinionated Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Crouch, and I know it's been a long time, but, you know, we're back. We're trying to get back into the swing of things. So today I'm joined by a very special guest, one of my influential music geniuses, you know, in my life. You could say he's the rock and the foundation of what my music taste is today. It's my dad.
I could say he's as nuts as me, apparently, if he believes that. But hey, nice to be here, guys.
it's a treat. We've been trying to line this up for over a year now, and we finally did it. So
well, literally, it was a year ago and 2 weeks was when we were supposed to start. I think September 17th, 18th, something like that.
Yeah, something like that for a second week of the football season.
Yeah, it was the second week of football season. And this is the first, so yeah. A year ago.
Well, now we finally got it. So what better way to start off your first venture into this podcasting and into diving into music? And we've decided that one of the key bands that we shared in common, one of my first few memories of just living in this world, it's listening to the band Kiss. I'm trying to think of the first time that it really stuck with me. But really, I can't think of that first time. I can only think of bits and pieces. And the first one that comes to mind is looking at the cover of the Carnival of Souls CD. That would be the first, I guess, just seeing these guys unmasked. You know, I didn't know they had this whole gimmick behind them. Another one that stands out is watching that Phantom of the Park movie, that glorious 10 out of 10 movie. And then I want to say that was on the second Kissology volume of the disc set that they released. The first Kissology had a very rough, like, concert in a club, and they played Nothing to Lose. And I think that was the first song that I was like, hey, this is actually a pretty entertaining band. I think I want to listen to more of this. And it only grew from here. So what I want to know, Dad, is, like, what was your first venture into Kiss? What stuck out to you? Was it an album? Was it just a song that you heard on the radio? Like, what was the moment? Like, what were you listening to then? And how did it evolve into Kiss?
I guess, of course, on the radio, you'd hear Rock and Roll Night and occasionally Detroit Rock City. And I was like, okay, whatever. It's just classic rock radio. But I guess what started me down the Kiss path was my buddy Scott. He was huge Kiss hard. Posters, old albums, and this, that, and the other. And he had Kiss Exposed on VHS, which you youngins probably don't know what that is. But anyway, and it would add the current videos, which is Who Wants to Be Lonely and Tears Are Falling, right? Asylum. And interspersed with old clips, you know, like Detroit 75 and Sydney 80 and a couple others. But I was just hooked. It was like, man, these are superheroes come to life. The blood spit and the fire breathing, the whole gimmick, you know.
Yeah, they definitely had that makeup. That's what makes them stand out.
Yeah. I mean, everybody has catchy, not most people had catchy songs, but they went the extra mile, and I thought, you know. But he had just gotten, or was fixing it, just gotten a Crazy Nights album. And we listened to that over and over and over. And I'm 13 at the time, 12, 13. So, yeah, it really left an impression on me. It kind of helped me bond with, as you're coming into your teenage years and trying to figure out everything, made me feel a part of, I guess.
I mean, that's what I would do with my friends in high school. Is like, I would share my music, they would share their music, and we would just, you know, talk about it and say, hey, I like this song, I don't like this song. Because a couple months back, me and my friend Camden, we just, like, started taking bands and doing, like, brackets of songs. And, like, we would do it from, like, most streamed, like, the top 30 most streamed songs. And we would debate on which songs would be better than the other ones.
Yeah.
But that's the glorious thing about music. I've preached that in my other podcast of talking about music, and it's a way for people to bond and the band members to express, their views on certain things sometimes, or just to get something out into the world that they enjoy,
Yeah, it's common language of the world. Everybody, I can't, maybe if I go to another country, I can't speak your language, but we could share a song,
Yeah, exactly. And Kiss is big around the world, So anyway, what we've decided to do with this series is kind of just listen to each Kiss album one by one, give our thoughts, our impressions, favorites, least favorites, and probably at the end of this, I would say we're going to rank them in order. And we're going to start with the studio albums first, and then probably have like a bonus episode for the solo albums, the live albums, because if we did it all in one, it would be, first of all, it would take too long. And second of all, I think I would have too much favoritism towards some of them, if we just did them all. So I think it's a good way to just kind of separate and break it up. That leads us to the first album, the self-titled debut album, which I recently got on vinyl. So happy about that. It was released on February 18th, 1974, and has the original four members except for Peter Criss, because they used to be Wicked Lester, and then they got a new band member in Peter Criss because they were looking for a drummer. Boom! You got Paul Stanley, Peter Criss, Gene Simmons, and Ace Frehley. So, when was the first time you listened to this album, and what was your thoughts on it after, maybe it was after Crazy Nights, maybe you listened to more of them.
It was after Crazy Nights, and it was after Alive. So to be
Gotcha.
honest with you, it was Scott had it. Most of all, these are going to Scott will be the where I first heard it. And he had this album, and I looked at the album cover, and I thought, that don't look right. What's up with that? With their funky makeup, because it was different, obviously. And I listened to it, and I thought these songs were slow, plodding, and to be honest with you, I didn't really care for it initially. And I was like, why don't these sound like they do on Alive? So initially I didn't like it, but over time, I've come to appreciate it. I enjoy it now. But yeah, initially it wasn't, it didn't yank my crank like the Alive versions did.
So I don't remember the first time I listened to this album, because I know I would always just watch the Kissology stuff, and you would always watch the live concerts, and I would watch them from time to time, but I was more interested in like the interviews with the band members. And then of course I was obsessed with the MTV Unplugged, and that's where a lot of my favorite songs are played. But since it was one of my favorite bands to listen to, I tend to go through the discography and really like dive deep. I don't just listen to the hits unless, I've tried to listen to their deeper cuts and I don't care for them. But I genuinely can't remember when I listened to this first album all the way through, but it had to be on the beginning of one of these stints of just listening to it all the way through. It's a lineup of 10 songs, all classics, arguably. And we start with the first opening track, Strutter. And I don't think you could have started off this album any better, to be honest. Like it gets to the point. It's poppy. It's rocky. It's 70s rock. It's pure 70s rock. It's not prog rock. It's just rock and roll. So what do you think about this opening track?
I think it's a Stone Cold classic, but I do think you could open it up better. And I would have put Deuce first if I
Really?
was to. Yeah. And maybe that's because they opened up so many concerts with it. I just think it's the better opening track. But no, as far as song itself, love it. Absolutely love it. Great walking bass line. Was actually the first song that Paul and Gene wrote together.
Oh wow,
Together.
okay.
So that's pretty cool. No, about looking at girls, which I guess we'll figure this is kind of a theme that runs through most of these.
I mean, look at interviews about Kiss. They're obsessed with girls,
Keep it
that's the
simple, stupid.
yeah,
Kiss.
exactly. Pretty much. And then we move on to track two, the one that like kind of just cemented like, hey, this is a good band, Nothing to Lose. And I've heard many interviews about this one, about like Gene Simmons, and a lot of people think it's about It's about sex, you know, so, and it is trying about
Yeah.
the back door, you know.
Sodomy.
Yep.
A catchy song about sodomy around.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know what it is. I think it's probably the drum line and then the riff at the top. You know, it really just caught my ear. It's very easy to listen to, and it's that those drums, you know, it really really gets me. I don't know.
One of the most underrated Kiss songs, I think. I absolutely love
Definitely.
It. I mean, you know.
That's why I'm glad they've played it live a couple times, and specifically on MTV Unplugged, but you know.
Yeah, and then the reunion shows, they played it quite a bit, I think, or at least at the start of the reunion show. They might have dropped it later on, but and the melody Gene stole from the Sea Cruise song. Ooh wee, let me take you on a sea cruise back in the '50s. He's still part of that. I mean, steal it. There, you know, you just get it from everywhere. But yeah. That's part of the No, absolutely. Stone Cold classic. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. I think it is overshadowed by everything else that is on this album, as you'll see. But I just so far, those first two tracks, I mean, I'm still hooked. You know, there's not a song that's like, maybe not. Maybe that's just a hit or miss every once in a while. And then that leads us to track three, Firehouse, another classic. What we know now with the live performances, it only elevates this song, but it's still enjoyable to listen to. Again, talking about girls, get the Firehouse because she sets my soul on fire, you know.
Paul said he kind of ripped off or was inspired by a band called The Move, and they had a song called Fire Brigade. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of his initial basis for writing the song. But yeah, another. This, I mean, like I said, this is almost the greatest hits. We'll get to a couple here that I'm like, whatever. But another Stone Cold classic. Love to hear it in the set.
Mm-hmm. And track four, Cold Gin. Just it keeps on coming. It keeps on coming. The one thing, like, when you listen to live performances of this song, it sounds like, you know, the riff that Ace is playing, it goes together. But really, there's a break in between those two notes when he's hitting the main riff that I never noticed until you listen to the studio album because it's a lot more prominent, you know?
Yeah, that tends to blend together. The first time I specifically remember hearing Cold Gin was on the Animalize Live and Censored VHS again. And if you listen to that versus, well, any of it, but they were playing in a million miles an hour in the 80s. So when I first heard the original, I'm like, man, that's slow and plodding, but it's actually much better slower. The groove's more pronounced. But yeah, another Stone Cold classic. I used to have some Pantera home videos, and they would dress up like Kiss and do this song a lot. It's just another Stone Cold classic. Mm-hmm. It's Ace Frehley's first song, too, that he ever wrote for Kiss.
You can definitely tell, like, what songs that Ace had a hand in because the solos or the riffs are so catchy, so punchy, you know.
Mm-hmm. And usually a little on the heavier side, but yeah, catchy as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Stone Cold classic, love it.
And then we got track five, halfway through the album. I think this one's pretty underrated as well, and especially like listening to an interview about it, Let Me Know. It was originally called Sunday Driver, but this was one of the first few songs that Gene and Paul kind of got together and wrote. Because I listened to, it was an interview with Howie Mandel and Gene Simmons pretty recently. And he was talking about the time where he was like, oh, you know how to play guitar to Paul and stuff? And or Paul said that to Gene, and Gene was like, yeah, just let me show you. And then he started playing. I think it's pretty good. I wouldn't say it's like a Kiss song, you know, but it's a very catchy, poppy song that really, I tend to like the more poppy, melodic, you know, happy-go-lucky songs for the most part. And I think this is one of the most underrated ones, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, another classic. I certainly put it up with at least in the top 20, you know, probably.
Definitely.
But
at least
another
in the makeup
great
era, you know.
Mm-hmm, for sure. For sure.
And then we go to track six, and then this is where it starts getting, okay, this is kind of cheesy. What's going on here? It's Kissing Time. And it's, I guess they were just trying to do a play on their name. I really don't know a lot about this song. But then they were just, you know, It's like Baltimore, it's kissing time. You know, like what?
It was originally performed by an artist named Bobby Rydell back in the 50s. And the only reason it was put on here is because their manager was like, well, we're going to have these kissing contests and this will go perfect. They didn't really want to do it, which I understand. It's a bit cheesy, you know. I mean, if I'll listen to it, but it certainly ain't top tier Kiss, you know. Yeah. So, it is what it is. It was made for the kissing contest and have that blared and getting their name out there. But overall, as a song, it's whatever.
It ruins the flow of this. Like, Let Me Know is, it kind of ruins the flow of like the plotting, you know, heavy guitar riffs, but it still holds up as a song. This is just like, why are you doing this? It's a cover, you know, like there's no point. But I guess if they, I want to see, you know, you probably know if there's like some demos out there of the first, maybe they could have even brought some Wicked Lester songs and just replaced Kissin' Time, you know?
They certainly could have and did later, like on these next couple albums, put some, messed with some Wicked Lester songs and turned them into some Kiss songs. So he certainly could have put stuff in there that wasn't Kissin' Time.
Gotcha. Then we move on to track 7, Deuce, the one that you said that you would open this album with.
Yeah, I top 5 probably. Absolutely love this song. It was actually, Gene said he took the Rolling Stones song Bitch, that riff, and reversed it and come up with Deuce.
Oh, wow.
I mean, lyrics are kind of nonsensical, I guess, but yeah, it's rock and roll, man. It's a good time. Love it.
It's back in the flow of what we started off with the first half of the album. And then we move on to track 8, Love Theme from Kiss, which when I was listening to this recently, I was like, if you put this on anywhere, nobody's going to tell you, hey, that's Kiss. I know exactly what this song is. It does not sound like them at all. It's just so unnecessary. It's just a purely instrumental track. Thankfully, it's only like 2 minutes and 24 seconds, but you know, it breaks up the flow again, you know?
Yeah. It was taken from a song called Acrobat that they played, you know, before they got signed, and just that took that one little piece from it. But yeah, it doesn't really fit with the rest. And I mean, I don't hate it per se, but you could take that in Kissin' Time and off and nobody would miss it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it could just be a 8-track album, or, you know, and I'd be happy. It would be a perfect, I'm getting ahead of myself, but you know. And then after Love Theme from Kiss, you're like, okay, well, maybe they're doing this 50-50 thing that I was thinking about earlier, you know? And then you move on to 100,000 Years. When I first listened to it, I was like, it's not as strong as the previous ones. I think the first half of the album is so much better than the last half. But I think it's just because Kissin' Time and Love Theme just kind of put a bad taste in my mouth, you know?
Yeah.
But after re-listening to it, I'm like, okay, it's, you know, it's finally back into the flow of everything. Must have been a bitch while I was gone, you know. 100,000 years, that's a long time, you know.
Yeah,
it was a long time going without these good songs, you know.
Gene read a book called 100,000 Years about space travel or something, and that was inspiration for it. And absolutely love it. Absolutely, another one I absolutely love. They put Pete Solo right in the middle of it and Alive, and back when he could really, really play. And yeah, great man. You know, another one I really associate with Alive, but it's good. Certainly deserves to, belongs on an album, you know?
Yeah. And then we wrap it up with a final track, Black Diamond, which I think it's a very good way to end off this album. It doesn't end off on a low note, kind of, you know, low note as in Kissin' Time and Love Theme. You know, it's back to that rock, you know, talking about ladies of the night. And my only criticism with this song is that, you know, at the very end, they just stop and then it just goes slowly down tuning everything. And it's just slower and slower. I'm like, they do that for like 2 minutes. I'm like, okay, that's kind of, you know, if you would have cut the song when it stopped, I think it would have been even better. But they definitely did not carry that in the live version.
Yeah, another Stone Cold classic. They closed with this forever before Rock and Roll Night became what Rock and Roll Night became. That was their closer. So their initial Stairway to Heaven, or their initial fill in the blank, you know, biggest, I would call it biggest hit, but biggest concert staple that everybody looked forward to hearing, you know?
Yeah. Like it kind of throws you off at the very beginning because it's like it's kind of calm, you know, with Paul just singing, and then boom, you got.
Yeah, kicks you in the face, which
Yeah.
is, I guess, why I brought the Stairway to Heaven. It's got the, what's the word I'm looking for, where it goes from slow to fast, a light to heavy, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, dynamics. It's got good dynamics. So, yeah, another one I absolutely love.
So overall, as an album, I think it still holds up today. It's you can you know it's a first album. The production is not perfect, but it still has some good punch to it, and I really like it. You cut Kissin' Time and Love Theme, and you kind of shorten Black Diamond. I think it's a perfect album in my opinion.
Are you gonna put a number on it, like out of 10 or out of 5?
As of right now, you know, it's kind of hard because it is the first one, and like, you know, I might like an album further down the road. As of right now, I think it's a solid 7.7.
I was gonna call it 8, but yeah, I'm right there. Same
Cool.
thing, pretty
Yeah.
much. Well, there's 10. Is there 10 tracks? Is that right?
10 tracks, only 10
And
tracks.
two of them I don't like, so that's
Yeah.
8 out of 10, right?
I don't know. I kind of look at it as a whole. You know, I look at production. I look at, you know, I think a remastered version of this album would be awesome. But you know, I'm surprised they haven't released one, or they have.
Yeah.
It must be physical, you know, because it definitely isn't digital,
Nah.
on Spotify. But yeah,
I'm not. I don't keep up with the newest. Like, they've remastered and re-released everything these days, it seems, but I'm not 100% sure, to be honest with you.
they just keep reissue it looks like.
Well, because nobody buys new music these days. It's only
I
the
don't know.
class.
Vinyls are still coming back, you know. I
But don't you think it's mainly like older releases that people are buying of the
No, it's
vinyls?
represses. I mean, but the problem is they only do them for a limited time. So like, for example, my Kiss MTV Unplugged, it was repressed in 2014 because I don't know, like it was the anniversary, you know, because 74 to 2014, they repressed pretty much everything that year and then they just stopped. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't I like, but like, well, I mean, you have a few, like, you like the Ghost or whatever. There's a few newer artists that people buy physical or, that sell good numbers of copies. But overall, I just don't think there's as many physical copies of your generation. Younger just don't buy physical, generally speaking, or as much. I don't say don't buy, but you know what I mean.
I mean, the way I see it, I've said this multiple times before, but the way I see it is if I truly enjoy your music and I like that specific album that I want to get, I'm going to buy the physical copy, you know. Not a CD, not a cassette, you know. You're going to be lucky if you find a cassette player. Nobody makes 8 tracks anymore, but I mean, vinyl is still there, you know. I mean, you'd probably have to pull up a chart of like all the vinyl sales through the years, but I think it's still prominent. That's why people are still making it. I mean, Taylor Swift alone is making millions of dollars just putting her stuff on vinyl.
Yeah, I
You
mean,
know?
I guess it's still true. I'm kind of out of the loop. I'm an old man now of what's popular,
Yeah.
what sells or doesn't sell.
And now we move on to the second album, Hotter Than Hell. And I thought I could have sworn it was 75, but no, they released this later in
74, yeah.
74. On October 22nd, 74.
So they were releasing two albums a year for what? I don't know, 2, 3 years. I'd have to something like that, which
Apparently
is crazy.
there is a remastered version of this album, and that was released in 97.
Well, I
I'm
figured
not
there might have been one somewhere,
,1997. Well, it's definitely not on Spotify, I can say that. Master
No, they want you to go out and buy it. I don't. Could you even find it today?
Deluxe reissue featured. Yeah, I mean, it's CDs and vinyls. So yeah, we move on to the second album, Hotter Than Hell. And what was your first time listening to this one? And was it right after the debut, or did you just kind of split it up between something else?
It all kinds of blends together as far as the early back catalog of, probably 89. Yeah, probably 88, 89. And after listening to Crazy Nights and going back and just trying to listen to all of them, this is the one that grabbed me as far as a studio album the most initially. Absolutely loved it. And then when I heard this and bought it, it was one of the first that I owned myself, you know.
I think it stands out amongst all the earlier albums because it has that Japanese, you know, style on it. And I know you've told me why that was, but I don't remember.
I don't remember either. I know that something had to do with the photographer, I think, maybe, you know, that was taking the pictures, and it was some obscure, I don't know, it was trying to go after a certain vibe or something because the back they were laying around with all the girls. Now, I don't remember exactly, though, but I think it had something to do with the photographer.
I mean, it just says it's the album is well known for its striking cover, designed by John Van Hammersfeld.
Huh.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know. It stands out, but I think it is pretty, at least for today's standards, it looks cheap and cheesy. You know, it doesn't really fit. But
it didn't pop like Destroyer or others. You know,
exactly. It kind of it looks weird. But we start off with, I think this is another good track to lead off with, Got to Choose.
I can't argue that it's a great lead-off track, for sure. Yeah. I love it. I love it. I read it was inspired by a song by Wilson Pickett, and I don't remember the name of that or couldn't find it. But, yeah, it's absolutely – it's catchy. It's heavy. Yeah. And, like, the way they mixed this album almost says, it sounds like they were – you know, it's heavier. It's a heavy mix. A lot of people don't care for that mix, but I absolutely adore it.
Well, I don't know. It doesn't, like, it sounds heavy, but there's still some, like, it just sounds so crunchy, you know? It sounds muffled at points, you know? And that's why I was going to say, well, I wish they remastered this album, but apparently they already did, and it's only physical copy. So, you know, yeah. I feel like if I get my hands on that, this album shoots to the top for me.
But I don't know. I don't, even if it was remastered, I don't know if it would still, I don't know what it sounds like. I'd have to hear it. I don't know.
Exactly.
I like it the way it's produced, though. Kind of like, you know, Black Sabbath Born Again. Sounds like it was recorded in a cavern or something, you know? Yeah. But I think it adds to the appeal of it.
Well, Saint Anger surely didn't benefit from poor production, so I don't know. I think it's more reliable if you just have at least a solid production or the same production that you had on the first album. Because the first album is rough, yes, but it's still sound like you can still hear everything, you know. But yeah, Got to Choose, I think the riff, I love that riff so much, it stands out to me. I think I listened to the live version of this song before I listened to the studio, which is mainly what I did for most of everything.
Me too. I've heard 90% of them live before I actually heard the studios.
I'll point it out in probably later albums. Definitely Dressed to Kill, but some of the studio versions are better than live versions, but overall, I think I would rather listen to the live versions than the studio. Got to Choose as one of those, which was on MTV Unplugged. But for whatever reason, it's not on the actual MTV Unplugged album digitally. Maybe not even physically either. It was only put on the Kiss box for whatever reason. And that wasn't even the song that they messed up on. But anyway, that's another story. Then we go to track two, Parasite. Parasite Lady.
Kiss heavy metal. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Love it. Adore it. One of my favorites. Top 10 for sure. Ace Frehley song. But he didn't want to sing it. He still didn't believe in his vocal ability. So that's why he didn't end up singing it. But yeah, absolutely adore it.
I think I would like to hear an Ace version of that song. Like of him singing. I think he would fit well.
Yeah, well, you can. I mean, like his concerts, he plays it. You gotcha. Could hear that. But yeah, as far as a studio version, it'd be nice to have his take on it.
I think back to the riff, I think that's what really sticks out to me just for these early albums. Yes, riffs are punchy, they're heavy, they're catchy, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's why I like going back to the songs. Lyrically, vocally, Parasite is for me. That riff, I like to hear it, especially on the live version.
Yeah. Well, I mean, lyrically, it's Kiss. None of it's gonna move your world.
I don't know, but Got to Choose, I like
it. I mean, yeah, it's okay. But I don't really listen to Kiss lyrics, really. I mean, the way he sings is great, but, you know, what he's saying ain't gonna make me think or, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Let me move on to track 3, Going Blind, which I initially, when I heard this song, I was like, oh, this is a boring, slow song. Not gonna like this. They played it on MTV Unplugged. I'm like, this is probably ones that I skip, you know. But the more I listen to it, the more I enjoy it. It is slower, so it kind of, after Parasite and Got to Choose that are, you know, pretty poppy, upbeat, Going Blind, it kind of ruins the flow for me. But overall, as a song, I do like it.
Oh, I adore it. Always have liked it. Is it not their first ballad? Am I right? Their first recorded ballad?
Could be, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and Gene, I just love the way Gene sings anyway, so I adore it. It's coming from the point of a 93-year-old man talking to a 16-year-old girl, which is a little bit creepy, but...
Yeah, definitely does not age well.
No, a lot of these songs do not age well. Yeah. They would be canceled today. But, no, I absolutely adore it.
I think this song would flourish with better production because of Gene's vocals, because he goes hard in the vocals. Like, he probably goes higher than he ever has been, because, you know, he sticks to the lower bassy tones, he peaks it a couple times, so I think it really brings it down, unfortunately. But overall, as a song, it is very good.
And it was, I think it started as a Wicked Lester song, I think, called Little Lady. I think, don't quote me on that.
I think I remember seeing that somewhere. And then we move on to the title track, Hotter Than Hell. I think this is like a sequel to Firehouse, almost. Like, back to the hot stuff, you know.
Yeah.
Sets my soul on fire and she's hotter than hell, you know.
Yeah, sister song for sure. Very free influenced. Mm-hmm. Sounds a lot like kind of All Right Now or that kind of thing, the start riff. But yeah, what I love it, absolutely love it. But I tell you what I love better is Rip and Destroy from Phantoms, which is basically this song with new lyrics, you know. Hotter Than Hell's great. Yeah. Love it. Kiss at their peak.
Yeah, Kiss staple definitely right here. I think it is the number one track on here, just based off of the Spotify streaming. But the riffs, I'm going back to the riffs, but it, like you said, start, stop, it keeps you in.
Mm-hmm.
And then we move on to track 5, Let Me Go Rock and Roll. The more I hear the song, the more I hate it. Like, I didn't like it initially, but it feels cheap. It feels like they're trying to do like a 50s, 60s Chuck Berry type thing. Let me go, you know, and then just a classic riff of rock and roll.
This was the only single off this album.
Really?
Yeah. Crazy one to pick, huh? I'm not a fan of it. I think live, if you listen to some of the live versions, it could come off kind of funny, but it could also be a chaotic mess. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely probably one of my least favorite off this album for sure. Definitely. You know? Mm-hmm. But it's okay. I don't hate it. I guess that's the fair to Midland, you know.
Let me move on to track 6, All the Way. And I never remember this song. I can't. Every time I listen to it, I'm like, wait, this is Kiss?
I think it's one of their most underrated songs.
I can't remember it right now at all. Like, I don't remember anything from it.
Yeah, it just doesn't stand out.
It won't stick. It's the least, second least played, surprisingly, off of this album. Off of Spotify.
Spotify numbers?
Yeah, just Spotify numbers.
What's the least played?
Coming Home.
Really?
Yeah, that's why I'm confused. I would have thought would have been All the Way. But no, I can't remember anything from that song. It's not memorable. It is what it is.
Yeah.
Then we move on to track 7, Watching You. I really like this one. This is one of the first deep cuts. I was like, wow, this is a good Gene deep cut. How have I never heard this anywhere else?
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. Another one of my favorites off this album. of course, it's Gene singing, so it usually puts it already that I like it. I'm probably be more of a Gene guy than a Paul guy if you put a gun to my head. But yeah, absolutely adore it. Great riff. Just you get your head bobbing.
Yeah, definitely.
Kiss doing what Kiss does best.
Let me move on to track 8. Another underrated, in my opinion, especially for Peter Criss, because, you know, when you hear Peter Criss, you're like, ah, he's kind of eh. But I think this is one of his strongest, if not his strongest song, Mainline.
It's definitely up there. I like when Peter Criss sings the more aggressive material than the ballad. So this is one of my favorites, too. One of my Peter Criss's most underrated songs.
Mm-hmm. I like how it's composed, too. Like, it fits well with Chris's vocals. When I first got into Kiss, I liked Peter for the most part, but then I listened to his solo stuff, and overall I didn't like it. But I don't know, just I think his vocals on Nothing to Lose kind of got me into that raspy, rough voice that he has, and that just shines on here on Mainline, and it fits
Black Diamond very well. Shines. Yeah, no, I like Pete being aggressive. This is another great Pete song.
I think it's totally probably the best sounding song to me, just production wise, out of all this entire rough production.
Huh. I didn't even think about that one way or the other.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a banger, as you kids say.
Yeah, it is a banger. And then we move on to, in my opinion, a very good bang, Coming Home. I'm surprised it is the least played track here on Spotify, because I think this could have been a good opening track, or at least a number two to Got to Choose on this album for me, because they opened this on MTV Unplugged, and it's perfect.
I think this is one of those songs where the production does harm it. In fact, I always liked the song. I thought it was fine, but until it was played on Unplugged, that's when the kind of magic of it showed itself. Because
exactly.
I'm like, man, there's so much more melody in that than you could hear with this originally. Because I'm almost certain you heard the Unplugged version before you heard this one. Right?
Definitely.
Yeah. So, and of course, I was just the opposite. And I'm like, when hearing it originally, it's okay, whatever, you know. But when I heard Unplugged, it really brought the magic out with this one.
A lot
of songs did. Well, I mean, we'll discuss that later, but I think if you're unsure about Kiss, go grab Unplugged, man. They had some really strong songs.
Yeah,
you know?
Classics, really. And then some underrated ones here and there, especially including this one. But yeah, the production definitely does harm this one, but it's still enjoyable. I like this one lyrically. It flows very well. It shines Paul's lyrics. Like in the early days, Paul wasn't at his peak, but it's still enjoyable to listen to, and this is one of those cases.
Yeah, I agree. One of Paul's standout tracks. Much better.
And then we move on to the final track. I wouldn't say this is necessarily a good final track. It's okay. Strange Ways.
It's my favorite song off the whole album.
Really?
It's Kiss does Black Sabbath. And does it well.
I think lyrically it's a good song, but I don't know. It doesn't hit the same as the other ones. Mainly, maybe that could be just based off of production, but I don't know. I think...
Well, it's slow and sludgy. I think it's perfect for this style of production. Yeah, I absolutely adore it. Ace Frehley wrote it, and yet again didn't have confidence in himself to sing it, so he gave it to Pete.
Well, that's hotter than hell, and I think this one will have to rank about a 5.5. The production just brings it down. I'll still listen to it, but I like when I listen to Got to Choose. As soon as I hear Got to Choose on here, I'm like, damn, I really want to listen to the live version. And that's what I do, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so much better, you know? Like, I'm glad it brought us the songs that it did and some underrated gems, but I really have to listen to that 97 remaster, you know? But overall,
it's a 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10 for you.
9 out of 10.
I just can't. I can't. I gotta listen to that remaster and see what I think.
And you know, but see, this coming from different places. Like you know, you heard the Unplugged first, so yeah. You know, if I was in your shoes, I might think the same way. But I had an affinity and attachment to those songs, hearing them this way first. You know.
Yeah.
But no, I. it's funny. It's music. It's all in space and time in which it initially grabbed you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we move on to 1975, Dressed to Kill. Third studio album released on March 1975. So they're pumping out these albums.
And yeah. Like they are moving some product.
Moving it.
They weren't really hadn't started selling the albums yet either. So what do? You put it out there and, okay, don't move a lot of units. Well, go back and put another one out. Run everything up the flagpole. Eventually somebody will salute something, you know?
Yeah. So yeah, it looks like in 97 they just released a lot of remasters of the first few albums, it looks like. Because that's what it says for Just to Kill in 97. Man, I wish they would have brought them digitally. I don't know why they didn't do that, but, you know, it makes you want to go out and buy it, like I said. You know?
Exactly. It did what it was supposed to do, correct? Yeah.
But I feel that's the thing, is like when I hear it on digital, it's be like, okay, then I want it on physical. That's just how I am.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot easier, you know. But okay, Dressed to Kill. Back at it again with the 10-song set. I could have sworn this was a lot longer, but I was wrong.
But I think these songs are a little bit shorter. Am I wrong? I mean, I don't know. At least in my mind's eye.
It's 30 minutes, 15 seconds overall track time, or album time, excuse me. The first album is 35:17, and Hotter Than Hell is 33:12. So yeah, it is the shortest one, but I don't know. It feels like it's a lot longer, at least the first few times that I listened to it. But we'll talk about it. So we open up with Room Service, and an immediately you notice the difference from Hotter to Hell to this. Production is phenomenal.
I think so.
Yes, I do think so. Like, just you probably listen to it on your little TV, but I listen to it with headphones so I can get the full effect. You know,
the production is too sterile. It don't have enough life in it for me. It's okay. I mean, it's not terrible. I've heard worse, but it doesn't move me.
I wouldn't say that I agree with you that it's sterile, but you just, that big difference, you're like, okay, this is so much more pleasant to listen to from a production standpoint compared to Hotter Than Hell. And it is clean. I think some songs are good with clean production, and we'll get into it for the later songs. But Room Service, it's a solid opening track, but it's like, okay, you know, it's a poppy Kiss song. You would think I would enjoy it, and for the most part, overall, I do enjoy it, but it's not one that I go to, like, oh, Room Service, you know.
I gotta hear that song. No, it's okay. It's fair to me. I'll listen to it, but it ain't, like you said, it's not something I seek out, really.
Then we move on to track two. You got Two Timer. Very forgettable song. Listened to the lyrics, looked at them, wasn't impressed.
Yeah. It's another throwaway track. I think a lot of, to be honest with you, a lot of these are. I mean, it's middle of the road Kiss. It's okay. I don't hate it. Don't love it.
And then you got track three, Ladies in Waiting. Another forgettable one.
Best of the three, but yeah, still that ain't saying much.
No.
You know? I don't know. At Room Service, are probably about the same. Two Timer would be my least favorite, but yeah, whatever. You know.
And then track four, Getaway.
This is another Ace song, but it ain't as catchy of an Ace song.
No.
I mean, well, it is catchy, but it just doesn't move me. You know.
Yeah.
And it's all.
It's like, this is why, like, when I got to Dressed to Kill for the first time, I was like, wow, this is the song. This is the album that brought us Rock and Roll All Night. Are you sure? Like,
because
I don't
listen to.
Yeah, it's you gotta dig deep for some of the good stuff, and
we're fixing to get there though.
Yeah.
We're fixing to get there.
When just listening to these four songs, it's just not like, the production is phenomenal. I love the production, but the songs just don't hit the same. You know, maybe I was wrong about thinking maybe better production makes it better, but I don't know. You know,
but
and then
songs and that they just don't stick and stay. You know.
Yeah. And then we go to track five, Rock Bottom.
Beautiful.
Long acoustic intro, longer than I expected. It's like a minute and 50 seconds, and by that time, the song is pretty much over with, you know. But again, it was another one that I listened to on MTV Unplugged, and I liked it a lot more. It was a lot short, a lot punchier. And I like, I don't want to, you know, reach too far in MTV Unplugged, but like when he played it, it's like they played the acoustic intro, and then Paul's like, they pause, and Paul's like, now it gets rough, and then boom, punches you in the face with that riff. Yeah.
So now we've got 4 or 5 songs in, and we got one good one. So
one, far. Yeah, one good one. It's back to Rough Kiss. Like, okay, good production, great song, catchy tune. Intro's a bit long, you know, you almost lost me there, but as soon as you cut in with that riff, I'm like, okay, you got me in.
Brought you back home.
And then we move on to track Come On and Love Me. And I personally like the studio version over the live version every time I listen to it. And I think it's because of the production is so good on the album.
Probably my second favorite song on the album. Absolute Stone Cold Classic. One of the most underrated Kiss songs ever.
I think it's fairly rated. I think they put it in live sets a lot compared to some of these other, you know.
Yeah, I guess so. When Paul says you're good looking and you're looking like you should be good, that's just pure Paul poetry, man.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I think this is one of Paul's best out of pretty much all of the, like, Strutter's very good. But I think this is probably his best vocal performance out of the first three albums.
It'd be really bad. It's right up there. Yeah. You know?
And then we move on to track 7, which I didn't remember initially, but the past 2 times that I listened to this album, I'm like, this is a pretty good poppy Kiss song. It's kind of repetitive at some point, but like I like it.
She? Or no, Anything for My Baby.
Yeah, Anything for My Baby.
Catchy. It's catchy. It's got a catchy hook. It's got a good chorus. But it's not one of those that, I don't know, they didn't go back to a lot, so I guess I didn't go back to a lot, if that makes sense, you know? I don't hate it. It's better than the first four. Not as good as the last two, but yeah, it ain't terrible. I would listen to it again. I wouldn't skip it.
Yeah, it's definitely not a skip for me. I think it's poppy, it's catchy, love it. Definitely, just based off of the first few songs, I would rather listen to this, you know, out more. It definitely, it doesn't scream Kiss, you know, but it's still good.
Still a good song.
Yeah, and then we move on to track 8, She, and after
favorite album. Best song on the album.
Gotcha.
For me, you know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But I think it runs a bit too long. It's a decent song. Like, I don't know. This album just has me lost, you know.
This is the what do they call it? The Brontosaurus riff, you know, the stomping heavy metal riff, which I'm a sucker for every time. So this and Come On and Love Me would be, you know, depending on when you caught me, it's my 2 favorite songs.
Then we move on to track 9, Love Her All I Can. Very forgettable one, back at it again with the first 4 songs.
Same as Service, same as Ladies in Waiting, just another middle of the road kind of song, you know?
Then we move on to probably the most played, overplayed, definitely, song on the radio nowadays, and back then, just Rock and Roll All Night. And the first time I heard this studio album version was when we watched Kiss Phantom at the Park, because they open with this in the opening track credits, and it's not a live version, it's
the studio.
Yeah,
like you say, it's overplayed. It's, I love the walking bass line in it. You know, it's a classic, because, but yeah, I could never hear it again, and it'd be too soon.
Yeah.
But I can't deny the power and simplicity of it. Yeah, I could never listen to it again. And I normally want to hear I want to hear any version, but I always prefer the live better. You know, it seemed to have come across a little bit more power.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's Rock and Roll Night. You can't deny the magic of it. But
after slogging through all that stuff at the top, finish off with this. It is probably, at least from, based off of the first 3 albums, it's probably the strongest ending song out of all.
Oh,
of them.
Yeah, it's hard to deny that. You know, just because I don't want to hear it no more doesn't mean it's not a good song, or you know, doesn't deserve the credit it deserves.
Yeah.
I mean, like AC/DC, Shootin' Y'all Along, I could never hear that one again either, but it don't mean it's not a good song.
I don't know if I'm in the mood for some just classic rock and roll, Shook Me All Night Long. It still hits, that riff.
I'm fine without it. I mean, I love me some AC/DC, but not that one. I'm always going to skip it these days.
Maybe a future, another discography dive.
Give it 30 years, son.
Yeah.
Feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some songs, like some modern day songs that I'll hear and I'm like, okay, I've heard this enough in my life and I'm only, 22 years old, but that's how music is,
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly.
But overall, this album, I'm gonna have to give it like a 4, like maybe a 3.5 if I'm in a bad mood, but this is a solid 4. For me,
I was gonna say 4 too, actually. Let's see, 1, 2, yeah, it's 4. I just can't have any good songs on there. That's how I rate it.
Yeah.
The first one that 8 good songs out of 10 is 8 out of 10.
Yeah, no, it's rough. It sucks. I love the production on it, and finishing off strong with Rockin' All Night, it still doesn't bring it up past 5 for me. It's a 4.
You get a home run every time. You got to have some foul balls, some singles, and strike.
And this is when Kiss was getting desperate. So yeah. They had to do something, to really bring it home.
But if you take these 3 albums and you put all the best songs in a live version, you might have some magic cards.
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly what they did. And it's phenomenal, but we'll touch on it at some other point. But so I think this is gonna wrap up the first episode. Talk about the first 3 albums, Genesis of Kiss, and then we'll talk about After Alive, and we'll touch on probably Destroyer, Rock and Roll Over, Love Gun, and if we can fit it in, we'll try Dynasty, and kind of get through the makeup era, because I think Rock and Roll Over is a very short album. I guess Dress to Kill is probably the shortest album. I don't want to tease too much, but Rock and Roll Over is interesting. Destroyer's up next, so that'll be fun to listen to.
Sounds like a plan. I really enjoyed it, son.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you for joining me on this Kistery journey. Still a lot to go through, but I'm looking forward to re-listening to all these albums again and kind of looking through it like a critical lens, in my opinion, really analyzing everything instead of just face value. That's just how I like to indulge in my media, is like kind of look at it from a critical standpoint, and kind of break it apart and see what they're doing, what they're trying to do, and how they did it,
Been a blast.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. It's been the Opinionated Podcast. I'm sorry for not releasing. I think it's been almost a year now. Pretty close to it, anyway, of not releasing anything. But I'm trying to get back in the swing of things. It's just schedules aren't lining up. So far, I think most of my episodes have been music, or like it's tied music and movies, but that's what I enjoy, music and movies. Those are the first 2 things that you got me interested in, music and movies. So maybe we'll do a podcast about movies at some point, because I know, like, I could name off a few that you had on DVD: The Toy, Spaceballs, Young Frankenstein, just classics. So
yes, they are.
Yeah. But thank you guys so much for listening, and talk to you later.